listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I'm here to help you break free from binge eating, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me today, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind and what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's what's eating at you that is the problem. So let me start with a question from Sharon. She writes, You talk about how deprivation can lead to binging. I'm afraid to do something like your client who had a milkshake every day. I'll explain that in a second. My mean voice inside is saying, you will just gain a lot of weight if you try this with cake or cookies. Nothing has worked before. What can I say to myself to be more compassionate and give this a try? The only thing I can think of is, I have faith in Dr. Nina and how she has helped me thus far. Oh, Sharon. She will be there to support me as I try this new skill. Oh, that makes me, that's so moving. Thank you, Sharon. Okay, I'm going to answer the question, but I'm first going to talk about what she means when she references my client who had a milkshake every day. So this woman came to see me and she said that she couldn't stop having milkshakes every day after work. This was pre-pandemic when she worked in an office. She would leave the office and every day she would say, I am not going to stop by the drive-thru and get that vanilla milkshake. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it every day. She did it. So she came to me and she said, please help me stop eating vanilla milkshakes every day after work. I can't stop myself. I said, okay. I'm going to tell you what to do, and you got to promise me you're going to do it. You're going to do it, or else this is not going to work. She said, yeah, I'll do anything. Just tell me what to do. I said, okay, every day between now and when we're meeting next week, I want you to, when you leave work, I want you to go and have a vanilla milkshake. And she gave me a look that was rather priceless, like suddenly I had sprouted like another head. And she said, no, I want to stop eating vanilla milkshakes. I said, I know. I get it. I know. Here's just follow what I'm doing. So about day four, she called me and she said, Dr. Nina, please, I am so sick of vanilla milkshakes. Please tell me I don't have to keep having them every day. How about that? See, when she was depriving herself, or the anticipation of deprivation and the experience of deprivation only made her want it more. So when she told herself she couldn't have something, of course, she wanted it even more and she couldn't stop herself from having it. Anticipation of deprivation or actual deprivation leads to eating the things that you think you shouldn't eat and that you're telling yourself you shouldn't eat. When you have permission to eat it, you can decide, A, if you really want it, and B, if you have it, how much to have. There was a study several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, and these people were trying to prove the existence of food addiction. And so they said to the participants in the research study, hey, what we want you to do is eat your forbidden foods. Whatever those forbidden foods are, those bad foods that you forbid yourself from having, or maybe you binge on, whatever those forbidden foods are, we want you to eat them. And they thought that they were going to prove the existence of food addiction, because the idea was, these people are not going to be able to stop eating these sugary, carby, whatever kinds of forbidden foods. They're just not going to be able to stop because they're food addicts. Well, you know what happened? People actually ate less of their forbidden foods. Same principle as the case with the woman with the milkshakes. And by the way, there was a reason why she was wanting to turn to milkshakes. She didn't know how to comfort herself. There were other things going on. It wasn't so simple as just have it and you'll be fine. But I just want to make the point. So when people have permission to have the things that they think they cannot have, they have choice. They have empowerment. It's just really hard to give yourself real permission because often you don't really believe yourself. Kind of like Sharon's mean voice, and she, in her email, she capitalized mean voice. You will just gain a lot of weight if you try this with cake or cookies. Nothing has worked before. So number one, notice how Sharon refers to herself. You'll just gain a lot of weight if you try this. She's talking to herself in second person voice. She's not saying, I'm going to gain a lot of weight. No, she's saying you're going to gain a lot of weight. So that is right there. When you talk to yourself in that second person voice, that is often a clue that you are talking to yourself from the inner critic. And notice later she says, I have faith in Dr. Nina. She didn't say, well, you have faith in Dr. Nina. She's helped you thus far. She's totally in first person. She's saying, will be there to support me as I try this new skill. She's fully in first person. So Sharon, one thing is to really watch that second person voice, because when you talk to yourself in second person, it's not as nice. In this case, it's certainly very naysaying. You're going to gain weight. Mean voice. So what to do instead? To tell yourself that cake is and cookies are just foods. Bananas, strawberries, lettuce, whatever, it's just food. We create the good food, bad food idea, which is diet mentality, which then becomes the good me, bad me. How often have you said, oh, I was so bad, I ate pizza, or I ate ice cream, or I ate those chips, I ate chocolate, I was so bad. No, you just ate pizza or pasta, chips, or chocolate. Or I was so good. I ate salad for lunch every day this week. I've been so good. No, you're not being good. There is no virtue. There's no basic embedded virtue in eating salads. This is diet mentality. And what it does is it sets us up to feel bad. When we eat something that we think is in the bad list, we feel bad, and then we feel bad about ourselves. And then when we feel bad about ourselves and we don't know how to feel good about ourselves, how to comfort ourselves, how to be kind and supportive, what happens? We go to food to escape. It's a vicious cycle. So one of the things is ask yourself the motivation for eating, in Sharon's case, the cake or the cookies. If the motivation is, hey, we're celebrating a birthday, or it's dessert, or, it's a hot day, ice cream sounds good, that's normal eating. It's called normal eating. You have a piece of cake, you have an ice cream, done. However, if you're eating that cake to resolve something emotional, to numb, distract, fill a void, get more sweetness in your life, whatever it is, when you're eating that cake to resolve something within you, then that is a motivation that tells you, no, you don't need cake. You need to comfort yourself. You need to respond to yourself in a different way. So that's one thing that is really important to think about. And then take away the deprivation. You really can have any kind of food. You really can. Just look at why you're eating it. And if you're eating it to resolve something emotional, attend to that. If you're eating it out of some anticipation of deprivation or experience of deprivation, I can't have cake. I haven't had cake for 3 months. I need that cake. You know, take away the deprivation and give yourself that choice. Josh is writing something about Freud and compulsion and sexuality. And you know what? I'm not a Freudian. I'm not a Freudian at all. So I don't look at things. He looked at everything initially as sexual, by the way, but not sexual in the way that we mean. But I am a psychoanalyst, but I am not a Freudian. I like to say that comparing contemporary psychoanalysis to Freudian psychoanalysis is like comparing a Model T Ford Freudian analysis to a Tesla. They're both cars. They both have wheels. They both have some kind of an engine and they have some commonality, but there the commonality ends. So I appreciate your Freudian insights, Josh, but I am not a Freudian. Just want to clarify. If you have any questions about what's going on, you know, internally, about why you're turning to food, about what's eating at you, about how to figure out what that may be, I would love to help. Okay, so hopefully I gave you some, through giving Sharon an answer to her question, I gave you some ways that you can change your relationship with food. Take away the deprivation. Look at the motivation for why you want that particular food. And talk to yourself from a place of first person, like a friend, not a critic. And Sharon, anyone else who could relate to Sharon, if you were going to eat some cake or your friend was going to eat some cake, what would you say to your friend? Would you say to your friend, "Ugh, you're just going to gain a lot of weight if you eat that. You're not going to be able to stop." Or would you say, "Have a piece of cake into all of our lives. Some cake or ice cream must fall. Enjoy." Right? Let's normalize all foods are just foods. They're neither good, they're neither bad. There's no morality. You're not a better person because you have salad, and you're not a bad person because you eat something on the forbidden list. Keep that in mind. Okay, so now I have some other questions from listeners. I'm thinking too many thoughts at once. Let me get to them. If you would like to join me on the show, if you're on Instagram, please just post a comment. If you have a question or a comment like Josh just did about Freud and compulsion. And if you want to call the show, the number is 323-203-0815. I would love to talk with you about whatever is on your mind, because whatever's going on with food, it is a solution to a problem. It is not the problem. It just seems like the problem, but it's kind of like yanking up a weed without getting to the root. If you don't get to why you're eating, nothing much is going to change. Okay, so here is a question from a listener. Why am I losing control over food? Well, here's the thing. As I just said, eating is a solution to a problem, some conflict, emotion, something going on inside. It is not the problem. So if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else, something painful or something difficult to deal with. And often that stays out of our awareness. It's hidden from us in our unconscious minds. We don't know sometimes that we're feeling a certain way, but a part of us knows, and we go to food to distract, numb, etc. Sometimes we do know, sometimes we don't know. So ask yourself, what would I be thinking about if I were not eating? What would I be feeling? What would I feel if I were not turning to food? Ask yourself, am I eating to sedate myself? Often, particularly with people who get anxious, they eat a lot of carby stuff, and it actually has a sedative effect. And so kind of relaxing their bodies in this way, rather than responding to themselves with words. Also, I should mention this, maybe you're so ravenous because you're ravenous because you haven't eaten enough. A lot of people ask me, hey, why can't I stop eating at night? Well, there are two reasons people eat at night. One is you have dinner, you're fine, you're satisfied, you don't overdo it, you're good. And then after dinner, you just can't stay out of the kitchen. And you just don't know why. Like, why can't I stay out of the kitchen? You think it's a matter of control. You think it's a matter of willpower. No, I promise you, something is going on inside that's making you go to food. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe you're empty. We work one way or another. We work all day. We're busy. At night, we're no longer so busy. We're no longer occupying ourselves with doing this and thinking about that and meeting this deadline and taking care of this kid and all of that. And that's when we are more attentive, or our thoughts are more available to us. Thoughts we don't want to think. One way to keep our thoughts at bay, or feelings at bay, if you can't be with yourself, is to do something. Go to the kitchen, then you can get mad at yourself for eating. Then you can focus on that. Focus on, I'm going to be good. I'm going to do this or that. Instead of focusing on what you actually are trying to avoid. Yeah, Josh, I don't need a lesson on Freud. I actually am a psychoanalyst. I took 2 years of Freud. So I appreciate your thoughts about Freud. Josh is writing about Freud in Instagram. But honestly, let's keep it to not about Freud, but about food and what's eating at you. That would be more helpful for you and for the audience. So, if you don't eat enough and you get so ravenous, you can't stop. Yeah, you're binging because you've been so deprived. So that's one reason why people binge, but that's just a physiological reason. Psychologically, it is because there is something going on within that is hard to be with, and binging is resolving that problem. It is the solution to the problem. The problem is some kind of loneliness, emptiness, anxiety, need for comfort, anger, resentment, whatever is going on. Something's going on with you that food is taking you away from. So take a look at that, because binge eating disorder is not about willpower. It is not about willpower. It is not about control. It is not even about food. It is a way of coping that ends up hurting you as much as it also helps you. It helps you in some way. That's why I call it a frenemy. It is a friend, and it does something for you. It distracts you. It numbs you. It sedates you. If you're lonely, it symbolically fills the void. I mean, it does so many different things. It also hurts you. So it is a frenemy. It is a way of coping. Remember that. It is not a mental disease. You are not mentally disordered. You just have a very negative coping strategy that is hurting you and hurting your self-esteem and your life and your body. So why can't I stop eating? Well, if you can't stay out of the fridge and you can't stay out of the kitchen and you can't stay out of the drive-thru and you think it's about willpower, nope, it's not. So here are some ways to cope other than using binging as a coping strategy. So next time you head for the kitchen or the pantry, or the pantry would be in the kitchen, or the drive-thru or whatever, the next time you head for food, ask yourself why. Be curious, not critical. In fact, I'm going to put on my curious, not critical hat. Literally, my curious, not critical hat. Here it is. Someone gave it to me once because I say it so much. I think it's pretty awesome. I think we all need to be more curious and less critical. Ask yourself, what problem is this food going to resolve for me? What problem is this food going to resolve for me? If you're critical and you sound like Sharon did in her email, you're just, you know, you can't eat that. You're going to gain weight. Why can't you stay out of the kitchen? What's wrong with you? That's shame. And all it does is make you feel bad. And then you just end up eating to avoid your own mean voice. We don't want that. We want to be curious. Huh, what problem is this solving? What would I be thinking about if I were not thinking about food? And this is hard. I just want to say this is hard because it is a lot easier to focus on food, to focus on willpower, to white knuckle it than it is to recognize the difficult, painful, scary emotions that are so hard to be with that you use food to escape from. But when you ask yourself those questions and you figure out what's going on with me, and then you express what you're feeling, it's very important. Big difference between identifying what you're feeling. Oh, I'm anxious. Oh, I'm anxious. Okay, I'm anxious. Then what? Well, nothing's going to change unless you then express that anxiety. I'm anxious because of this. I'm anxious because of that. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. And then you have to respond to yourself. You reassure yourself. Okay, so Josh, you're saying it might be fears or anxieties, which are, you know, anxiety is a kind of fear or fear is a kind of anxiety. So ask yourself, you know, what are you anxious about? And I also welcome you to call. If you'd like to call in and talk with me about that, we can certainly do that. We're just not going to talk about Freud. We're going to talk about you, Josh. All right. We'll see if Josh calls in. So you want to be able to express it. This is what's making me anxious. That's what's making me anxious. And then respond to yourself. What does responding look like? Well, with anxiety, one technique is to stay with what is instead of what if. Anxiety is about fear about the future, right? What if this happens? What if that happens? Oh my gosh, what if? If you say what if, then you have real fear in the, real anxiety and real fear in the present about a future that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And then, you know, then you feel terrible. And then there's food, takes you away, sedates you, calms you, all of that. So you express it, you identify it, you express it, and then you respond to yourself, well, what is reality and what you know to be true. What if is fear about the future. Reality is what you know to be true in the present. Not what you feel, not what you think, what you know. Reality. That is one way of kind of lowering or diminishing the intensity of your anxiety. And you also want to comfort yourself with words. Remember my acronym, vary your response. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. Yes, I'm feeling anxious or fearful for the following reasons. Of course I feel this way. How could I not? Who wouldn't feel this way given what's going on? Of course I feel this way. That's validating and acknowledging. And then you reassure yourself. I'm going to stay with what is, not what if. This is what I know to be true. This too shall pass. I have resources. I have capacity. I've gotten through tough times in the past. I will get through it again. I've got this. In other words, you reassure yourself. You don't just tell yourself, I got this. I'm going to be fine. First, you have to say, yeah, this is hard. This sucks. This is painful and difficult and yucky. Ugh. The mistake that most people make is they go right to the reassurance and they skip the validation and the acknowledgement. Can't do that. Gotta absolutely recognize this is hard, this sucks, this is difficult, this is painful, this is so anxiety producing, and of course it is. And it's not always gonna feel this way, and I have a strategy, and I've been through things before, I got this. Don't go right to the positive thinking and the gratitude and the dismissing and all of that, because you will not feel better. Be grateful after you tell yourself or acknowledge how painful and awful you're feeling. And of course, validly so. Okay. Basically, the question, why am I losing control over food, is like the key to change is identifying, why you're eating instead of focusing on what you're eating. And when you start to identify, well, what's the trigger? Because the trigger is not food. There's some trigger in your life that is happening and that you're turning to food as a way of coping. I'm going to stop eating. Why am I dieting but not losing weight? Diets do not work in the long run. That is why it's called the diet binge cycle. And if you've tried everything from South Beach to Weight Watchers to Whole30 to keto to intermittent fasting to paleo to whatever it is, then you probably know this. You lose weight, you feel good, you're like, I got this. Finally, this problem is in my rearview mirror. I feel good. And then inevitably, you go off the diet and you gain the weight back. And, if you can relate to that, listen, you are not alone. According to the CDC, nearly half of all Americans are on a diet. That is about 162 million dieters. And that's just the United States. People diet and they lose weight and then they gain weight. And all weight loss diets restrict food or calories in some way. There's always a eat this but not that element to a diet. And in response to this restriction, our bodies become more efficient so we can keep functioning on less food. And, I'm going to get to the cortisol and all of that stuff in a moment. But first, Josh is saying on Instagram, what would I be doing if I wasn't eating? Yes. What would you be feeling if you weren't eating? Binging. And if you weren't binging, what feelings would you be in touch with? What thoughts would you be in touch with? What is it that binging is taking you away from? And again, Josh, I welcome you to call and talk to me. If anyone else wants to call in, 323-203-0815 is the call-in number. I would love to hear from you. If there is something that is weighing on you or eating at you, call in and let's talk it over. Let's get to those roots. Because when you get to the root, the weeds go away and then you don't have to deal with this anymore. And that is a point I really want to make, that when you really identify the true triggers, when you figure out what's going on with you and cultivate new ways of responding to yourself, crucial, new ways of responding to yourself, then food stops being a problem. Binging stops being a problem. If you think that you're a food addict, if you think that you just have no control over food, if you think you have no willpower, think again. You are trying to help yourself in a way that is hurting you. But when you find a new way of identifying what's going on, expressing what you really feel, and responding to yourself differently, everything changes. everything for good. For good. This is not something you have to deal with forever. You really can normalize your relationship with food. And Carly Gash is on. Carly Gash is on. Hi, Carly Gash.
Hello.
I don't hear you.
Do you hear me well?
No. Oop. Wait, just what happened?
I'm here.
Okay, hold on. I don't hear you well. Can you say something? Sam is saying that your volume is low.
Okay. My volume is up all the way. Would you like me to call back?
Now it's better. I think whatever you did, it was effective. So now I hear you well.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Nina, it's always so good to listen to your radio show. Immediately, I put myself to saying good thinking. And I was like, I'm not going to call. You know, like, and I know why I was not going to call. I'm avoiding working on myself. I'm avoiding doing materials on your program. And I noticed very interesting thing. So I recently, about a week or so, I started calling people from Kazakhstan. You know, like my past acquaintances, somebody I worked with. I called my, what do you call it? You know, like speech teacher, the ones which teach you to be like a TV host. And I was like, especially today, I talked to one woman and I felt so, I don't know if I'm doing it to just connect back to those people who were like partially loving to me and prove myself that, oh, no matter how hard I'm going to work, I'm not going to find those loving relationships. Because working on myself and actually finding those loving relationships for me is a like full-time job. It's hard. It's exhausting. It's, you know, rewiring my whole thinking. But then I was like, or I have a second goal here. So I'm calling them, kind of testing them. Because recently I started talking to my mother. Unfortunately, I cannot avoid talking to her because I need to help her. She's a person with special needs and has only me in life. But I noticed how I devastated and depleted after talking I am. So recently I started fighting with her and I noticed, you know, Dr. Nina, I would blame her not for blaming, but like for explaining. But then I'm like, but she never told me that I will never reach my goals, or she never explicitly said that I'm like this or that. But then I noticed what happened, Dr. Nina, tone of voice. She might not say things directly, but with the tone of voice, it was always like a passive aggressive, you know, like gaslighting tone of voice. She would say normal words, but the tone of voice would like implement another meaning. Oh my God, it just hit on me. And I started telling her, if you're talking to me, you need to really calm down and like regulate the tone of your voice. You need to remove the passive aggressiveness because I feel it. I sense it. I know.
Carly Gash.
It's hard to.
Carly Gash. Stop. You have to stop when I interrupt you. Okay. First of all, really good insight in recognizing that her tone of voice was communicating something. Words can be, you know, that communication can be covert, as in the tone of voice, or overt, as in you're never going to make something up. So very good job in that. However, I do think it's interesting to look at this toxic hope that is coming up when maybe things start to get better for you, you start contacting your mom or other people in Kazakhstan. Also, I want you to pay attention to the tone of voice you have towards yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What about that? The way we talk to and about ourselves has a lot to do with how we feel, and how we feel has a lot to do with what we do with food. So what comes to mind?
Oops, sorry.
What comes to mind about your tone of voice with yourself? It's great that you're setting limits with your mom. That's great. But what about your relationship with you?
That's the thing. This past 2 weeks, I was like actually very, very shocked because I was watching myself from more like healthier perspective. And I just discovered that, oh my goodness, whatever thinking I have, even my gestures, reactions, it's all like so much of my mother and my family. Well, no wonder I'm struggling kind of to be loving towards myself because I don't love them in the first place, honestly. So
because you're not loved, because you don't feel loved by them. When we don't feel loved, when we don't feel loved, we don't feel lovable. And I'm saying that to you, to anyone who's listening, and to the person on Instagram who's saying her problem is that she hates herself. We learn to treat ourselves by the way that we are treated. If you are treated as you were, Carly Gash, in a way that did not make you feel loved or special, we don't think we are lovable. And that's something that, you know, that's so crucial to challenge. Where did you learn this idea that you're not lovable? And how can you cultivate a more loving response to yourself?
Thank you, Dr. Nina. So going to the solution, how to cultivate loving relationships to myself, could you please help me here? Because like, what it's a good part that I could see that I have a lot of reactions from my mother and my family, and this is actually not me. This is something I acquired as like an acquired behavior towards myself without thinking. And it's good that I'm seeing it now. But I was afraid, I guess, once I discovered it, because before it was my default behavior, not questioned. And now when I'm like, who am I then? So if I remove that, who am I going to discover? Like real me, and who is real me? And I'm always scared to find out my real me. Because, you know, I relied my whole life on this kind of mechanisms and like default behavior. But I don't know myself. Like I'm just getting to know with myself. So,
yes,
and unfortunately, I fall into not loving myself. But how would I change it?
Okay, so you have to heal the wounds of the past. If you were treated in a way which you were, and which Josh didn't get in the attention he needed, other person who hates herself was treated that way in a hateful way by their parents. You were treated in a way that made you feel as if you did not matter. You did not feel loved, and you didn't feel lovable. So that still needs to be healed, and giving up the hope that this family is ever going to see you and get you and understand you and be there for you the way you needed them to be. Have to give up that hope and mourn what happened and this is the important part, what didn't happen, so that you can see yourself as you are, as the perfectly imperfect, wonderful person you are. And we are all perfectly imperfect.
So thank you, Dr. Nina. I think I'm feeling, I'm sorry.
So you can see yourself not through their eyes, but through your eyes or the eyes of other people who really do see you and love you and appreciate you without you thinking, oh, I fooled them, or they don't know the real me, or something like that, so that you can actually learn to take in love, to take it in. And when you take it in, you feel loved and lovable. And then you take care of yourself. You don't abandon yourself with food.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. When you said that I need to mourn what happened and what I did, what didn't happen, I think I got a little better on mourning what happened. I think I kind of practice the skill and I feel confident in this. But when it comes to more of what not happened, I am so guilty when I step into this feeling or trying to feel or trying to mourn what didn't happen. I immediately hear their voices like, what are you complaining about? Other
you,
people have it worse.
You,
are you a princess?
You,
nobody had
you,
that opportunity. Why you think you should have it?
Stop. Because the more you give them a voice in your head, the more they are powerful and strong. The idea is to give them less of a voice. Whenever you refer to yourself from the second person, you, that's your family. Just like Sharon in her email, her mean voice was you, you're going to gain weight. Her nice voice was, oh, I've learned so much. So I want you to go on a word diet. Eliminate that second person pronoun when talking to yourself. Just don't do it. Just like stop yourself the way I stopped you. Stop. Give them space in your head.
Okay.
That's a way of staying attached to them, and you've got to give up that hope. That hope is toxic. That hope is poisonous. And it keeps you from being able to see yourself and as you are, and accept yourself and be loving and kind to yourself.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Nina. So I would just make effort this week to mourn what didn't happen with supportive voice of myself, kind of create space where I can mourn it. And if the voices will come, and they will definitely try to interrupt, I would silence them. I will silence them, and I will just keep practicing being nice to myself. I will not think much about it. I will just do it. And then kind of get used to hearing my supportive voice. It doesn't have to be perfect. I just need to do it once. And then I just need to repeat it.
Yes. And watch the tone with which you speak to yourself as well.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh my God, Dr. Nina. Tone is a big, big deal. Big deal. You know, I never noticed how impactful the tone is, but I'm a musician myself. I actually do hear all the pitches and stuff, but I know why I ignored the tone. Because to be able to communicate with my mother, and you know how hard it is to drop mother, even the one who doesn't love me. Just to communicate with her, I had to ignore her tone, because very deep inside I knew she doesn't love me. And if I was in touch with myself, I would believe that tone and say, that tone doesn't sound nice. This is not how people should talk to me, or eat, let alone my mother. But I was ignoring it. I was kind of not ignoring. I was numbing the realization that the tone is not right. But now, since I'm letting myself hearing it, and letting myself seeing it, how it actually hurts me. Now I'm very, very aware of the tone in other people's voices as well. Even at my work, when I have like phone conversations with my customers, drivers, you know, work-related stuff, I hear a lot in the person's voice. Wow.
So practice that for yourself. Speak to yourself kindly. Speak to yourself as you would to anybody else. And if you wouldn't say it to somebody else, don't say it to yourself. Why does this relate so specifically to what goes on with food? The way we talk to ourselves affects the way we feel. We The way we feel affects what we do. So if you're mean to yourself, you're going to feel terrible. If you feel terrible, you're going to use food. Because you can't simultaneously be mean to yourself, cut yourself down, tell yourself a bunch of mean, harsh things, and then support yourself when you feel bad. You can't do both of those things. And so changing the way that you see yourself, talk to yourself, and respond to yourself has everything to do with changing your relationship with food. And I you did a great job in recognizing having that insight about the tone, and also having the insight to see that this reaching back out to the family in Kazakhstan that's so brutal to you happened right after you started feeling better. And so there's a part of you that is very afraid to feel good. So these are great things that you did. Keep up the good work of being insightful and curious, critical and reflective, and you know, things are going to change. More things are going to change.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I love this work. This is so fascinating and interesting. It's just the best thing in the world. It's hard to say. It's just so interesting. Thank you very much for your help.
You are welcome, Carly Gash. Take good care of yourself. And remember, no talking yourself in you voice.
Okay. I will support myself in I voice.
Now, speaking of tone, you hear that tone? The way you just said that? That was so nice.
Yes, it sounds like better and kinder.
That was like, like verbal sunshine as opposed to... So there you go. Perfect example.
True. Well, very quickly, I'm actually scared to show up as like loving and supporting of myself because it was punished when I was a kid. But it's another question for another time. One step at a time.
Okay, one step at a time. Let me know. Please call next week and let me and everybody who's listening know how you're doing.
Okay, I'll do my best, Dr. Nina.
Okay. Bye for now, Carly Gash. Interesting. Right. So she said something about it's hard to like drop your mother. I'm not in favor of emotional cutoff from parents unless they've been like so abusive that it would be masochistic to stay connected with them. Because also, even if you cut off from, say, a parent who didn't give you enough attention or was hurtful or was emotionally or verbally abusive, there's a whole range. There's still that parent that you internalized in you. So there are two parents. There's the one in your head and the actual one who may or may not even be alive. They're still within you. The idea is to kind of do a psychological exorcism and get that internalized. It could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be a relative of some kind, it could be a mean coach, it could be a teacher who is cruel. I mean, whatever adult or sibling or whatever person in your life made you feel bad about you. You know, what was a relationship between you and that person or those people is now the way you are to you. So it went from relational to internal. And that's why doing this work to change the internal way we relate to ourselves is so dramatic and creates such incredible transformation. Because, you know, unless you deal with the true root sources of your relationship with yourself, food is going to be very compelling. People can be unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable. They can hurt you. They can abandon you. They can make you feel bad about yourself. They can just be toxic, even if they're, you know, even if they're the people who are supposed to make you feel the best about yourself, they make you feel the worst about yourself. That's catastrophic. And if the people who are supposed to make you feel safe and supported and good make you feel terrible, then how can you trust the world? It becomes very difficult. So people are unpredictable, unreliable, and unavailable. Food is predictable, reliable, and available. And it is understandable that you might turn to food or have more of a relationship with food and your body than with actual people, which is not to say you don't talk to people. A lot of people interact with people all the time. They're talking to them, but it's a performance. They're giving their best self. They're putting on a mask and they're like, hi, how are you? Everything's great. How are you? Let's talk about you. You know, people pleasing and all of that, and not talking about yourself and not being real and showing up in a certain way. You know, no, you've got to allow, when you allow people in, when you have satisfying and gratifying relationships with people, you can fill up with their love for you, their like for you. You can feel good about yourself. You don't need food for comfort when you get it from people. You don't need food to be there for you if you're lonely, if you can feel connected with people. So that is it for the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you want more inspiration and information like this, head on over to my Facebook group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. You will get support, understanding, and strategies to change. And I'm also in there on a daily basis. You can ask me anything and I am there to help. Again, that's Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community on Facebook. I will see you there. Stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin. Only on LA Talk Radio.